In the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, there was a concept. In the days of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. Oh, microphone is not on? Oh. In the days of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, there was a concept of an aguna. Aguna means a woman whose husband is probably dead. They killed a lot of people. A lot of people drowned in the ocean. There was a shipwreck or something like that. The husband is probably dead. And but as long as we're not sure 100%, so we don't permit her to remarry. So since the case was that the husband is probably dead, so there's a lot of room to be mekel, even though the Chachamim v'Machma a lot of times. We'll discuss in more detail a little later. Today we use the expression aguna with a totally different connotation. You have a couple where the husband is for sure alive, but he refuses to give his wife a get. So in modern Hebrew, we call that an aguna. Okay? So the Gemara has, in a few cases, in a few rare cases, four or five cases, the Gemara has a situation where a woman is absolutely an eshes ish. She's still married to the husband. Husband is alive and kicking. And the Chachamim declared that that even though the husband gave a get that was not acceptable, the Chachamim declared that she's allowed to remarry. Why is that? So the Gemara says, when we all get married, Rashi and Tosis interpreting, when we all get married, we say, Haret Mekudesh Esli, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, according to the laws of the Rabbanim. And if the Rabbanim declare that the marriage should not take effect, so they have a right to annul the marriage. Okay, that's what the Gemara calls that, Afkin Rabbanim v'Kedush Meneh. The rabbis declared that the marriage is not valid. So the Gemara has this in four or five cases, specific cases. What about in additional cases? Is it only those four or five cases? Maybe we have a situation of an aguna where there's a miserable husband and he should have given his wife a get, and he's mean and he's very unfair. Do the rabbis today have the right to declare Afkinu Rabbanan Kedushin Meneh? So this was a big dispute in the days of the Rishonim. There was a minority opinion that in any generation, the rabbis of the generation, the prominent rabbis of the generation, who everybody looks up to, let's say the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, or Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, someone who everybody looks up to, and you can say, when I got married, I said, Kedas Moshe Yisrael had a mind, according to what those prominent rabbis would say. So there was a minority opinion that in any generation, the prominent rabbanim of that generation have the right to annul a marriage. And the majority opinion was that we don't accept that, that we only apply Afkin or Rabbanan Kedushin Meneh in those several rare cases that appear in the Gemara. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. It was discussed way before. Shulchan Aruch was written in the 1500s. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and that's the accepted opinion. So unfortunately, we have many situations today where the husband refuses to give a get, and it's very unfair. And the wife is stuck. The wife is what we call in modern Hebrew an agunah. So some have come up with new ideas how to allow the woman to remarry. So the Gemara has a principle of toyas. Let's say if I pay for 10 pounds of potatoes and they deliver 10 pounds of onions. So that's considered a mekach toyas. I marry a girl, and it's understood when you marry a girl, you're interested in having children. It's in the days of the Gemara that was assumed that a couple who gets married is interested in having children. And if the wife notifies the husband, there was a boy in New York who had difficulty finding a shidduch, and finally he got married in his 50s, finally got married to a girl. And then within a week he calls me up, he says, and all the rabbonim attended the wedding because everybody was trying to get the guy shidduchim. And then within the first week he calls me up, he tells me he's getting divorced already. The girl tells him after they get married she's not interested in having children. So the Mishnah says that that's a kiddush etoyah. Strictly speaking, it could even be you don't even need a get. He gave her a get, and she agreed to take the get. But in the days of the Gemara, it was assumed by religious Jews, it's assumed when a couple gets married that they're interested in having children. So if the woman is unable to have children, physically impossible, so then the Tosfos on the first Mishnah in Yevamah says that that's a kiddush etoyah. You don't even need a get. You don't even need a get with the Rabbanan. Wow. You don't even need a get with the Rabbanan. So there is a concept of kiddush etoyah. What if that's if the mistake is the husband made a mistake? He thought the wife is able to have children, she's not able to have children. What if it's the reverse? The wife finds out that there's something very wrong with the husband. So how wrong how bad does it have to be? So in the days of the Gemara has a concept that the women would be more interested in getting married than the men. So the woman would agree to marry a man, even if he has a mum here and there, there's something missing in the husband. Women are more interested in companionship than the men are. So the Gemara has the expression, tav lemesav tandu, it's better, from the perspective of a woman, it's better to be married to a fellow who is not 100% all there, than to live by yourself. So in the days of the Gemara, it was assumed that if the husband has a bit of a mum that the wife was not aware of, that this would not be considered a kiddusha to us, and you would still need a get. What happens if there's a major mum, some major problem with the husband? So then all the poskim throughout all the generations say that if it's a major mum, then it's a kiddusha to us, you don't even need a get. So that's what some of the some rabbis have been pushing for the following idea, which sounds a little unreasonable. If a couple is married and have six children already, then the husband loses his job. So if the woman would know that after six children, after 20 years of marriage, the husband is going to lose his job, she never would have married him in the first place, and therefore she doesn't need a get. Ask goyim in the street. Ask a goyim in the street. Is that, do you think that that's a valid reason to annul a marriage? There's a concept of annulment of a marriage in secular law also. So is that a sufficient cause to annul a marriage? They'll laugh at you. That's ridiculous. How rabbis can come up with such an idea? They're living together for 20 years. They have six children. And then the Bezna annuls the marriage, because if the wife would have known that the husband is going to lose his job after six children, she would never have married in the first place. That's very unreasonable. That whole idea, if I would have known that it's going to turn out like that, I would have never had done it in the first place. Is this what we do by HaTorah's Nedarim? A person takes a neder, the shvigar is having a 100th birthday party, 100 years old. And he takes a neder, he's not going to attend the birthday party. So the idiot didn't realize the shvigar is going to cut him out of her will. And she's going to curse him, and she's never going to visit her daughter. He didn't realize what he's in for. And then later, when it comes to the 100th birthday party, he doesn't show up, and she gets angry, and she's still betokfa. She's still healthy enough to scream and to curse and to dance and to sing. And then he comes to the bed and he says, wow, if I would have realized that the shvigar is going to be so angry, I never would have taken such a neder. So if it's true, if he tells a lie, if he would have taken the neder anyway because he was so angry, and the bezin is not the neder, the hataras nedarim is not valid. The neder is still binding. And he violated the neder. But if it's true what he says, that if someone would have told me at the time that I took the neder that I'm going to get into such trouble with my shviga, with my wife, and with all the relatives, I would never have taken the neder. If it's the truth, then there's a special din of hataras nedarim. Hataras nedarim is not explicit in the Chumash. The Mishnah in the end of the first parak in Chagiga says that it's from the halachas that parchas bo'avir is just orally transmitted from generation to generation. Usually the Torah Shabbat Peh are dinim that are derived by reading in between the lines of the Chumash. How come we have an extra phrase, a missing phrase, an extra letter, a missing letter? We believe the Chumash was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, word for word and letter for letter. So if there's an extra letter, a missing letter, an extra phrase, a missing phrase or something, so we are medayik. Those are the Midrash HaTorah and the Drash HaSpam. So the Mishnah in the end of the first parak in Chagiga says that HaTorah Nedarim is Halachal Moshe Misina. It's only orally transmitted, parchas ba'avir, like sound waves. There's no way to read it in between the lines. The Tanoim and the Gemara. The Gemara quotes many Tanoim and the Brises who disagree with the Tan and the Mishnah. They say, Yesh lamal meshe yismochu. There is a way to derive HaTorah's Nedarim by reading in between the lines, and the Tanoim give different psukim. So this whole concept of HaTorah's Nedarim, the din is you need a bezin, it doesn't become muta by itself, and the bezin has to paskin, mutalach, 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 we are mata the neder. But the HaTorah's Nedarim is based on the fact that the bezin declares that it's a neder betois. And there are many dinim, there are many results of that because of the fact Bezin declares that it's a neder betois. So that's a special din by HaTorah's Nedarim, because the das that's necessary, there are different levels of das are needed for different things. Let's say when you sell potatoes, you need das. When you go shopping for vegetables, you need das. When you get married, you need a little more das than buying potatoes. And when you get divorced, you need an even more, a higher level of das. Aloha has differences, aloha lemaisa. For to get divorced, you need a higher level of das than you need for kiddushin, because getting divorced is a more serious decision than getting married. And for das nedarim, it's a lower level of das than for buying the potatoes or buying the real estate. Das nedarim is what we call das haflo, kiyaf le'ish. The din is that, simple indication, the din is that a child, a boy or a girl, a year before bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, can also take a ned and that'll be binding. That's a machlokes in the Gemara, a machlokes the Rambam and the Ravid, whether that's a din deraisa or a din derabbanan. But even if it's a din derabbanan, that's called mufla samach liyish, the year before bar mitzvah. If a child the year before bar mitzvah sells something, so the kinyan is not chal min ha-Torah. For sure not. The child a year before bar mitzvah gets married, the kiddushin is not chal. But by nedarim, the din is that it is chal. So that's a clear-cut indication that it's a lower level of das. You don't need the same high level of das that you need for kinyonim. And by kiddushin, you need even a higher level of das. And by gittin, you need even a higher level of das. So to confuse these, to say that if the man says, if I would have known that I'm going to get into trouble because I got married, I would have never got married in the first place. That's a joke. That's by Hatoris and Dorim. You're Mater and Neda like that, because in Neda, easy come, easy go. You don't need such a high level of das. So you can break, you can declare that as a Neda Bitois if you have Kandina Bezin. But over here, you can't declare a Kiddushin as a Kiddushin Bitois, because we assume you needed a higher level of das to begin with.
Even if you would argue, Louis saw that would be good, that you have to do it right away. She can't continue to live with him and then to say, I want to be Mater Neda.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So this is incorrect. That people think that if I would have known that the marriage is going to go sour, let's say you buy stocks in a company and the stocks go down. If I would have known the stocks are going to go down whenever I bought the shares in the company, or you buy a house in a neighborhood and then all the real estate, the value of the real estate goes down. So he says, if I would have known the value of real estate is going to go down, I would never bought the house in the first place. That's ridiculous. You know, in the first place that there's a risk. You know, there's a risk when you buy shares in a company, it may go up and may go down. And you know, when you buy shares in a company, when you buy real estate, it may go up and may go down. So you know, in a marriage, a lot of people are getting divorced. You know in advance that then it may be successful, may not be successful. So they date each other for a couple of times, and then they decide if they want to get married. You can't declare later on that it was a kiddushin b'tois. Because it didn't work out well. After six children and after 20 years of marriage, you're going to declare that it's a kiddushin Torah. That's a joke. That's a big joke. Sometimes a couple got married, and at the wedding, a lot of people were present at the wedding. So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk that in order for kiddushin to take effect, you have to have what we call in halacha edus l'kiyum hadover. That's an expression that was coined 100 years ago. What it means is if you didn't have two witnesses watching at the time that the chosen gave over the ring to the kal and said, "Hey, Mikdash and Shlisa," the marriage doesn't take effect. I had a very strange incident many years ago. I live in Washington Heights. So the local Jewish prostitute in the neighborhood used to be an Eishes Ish. She was married to her husband. Her husband left her. And for a couple of years, she didn't have a get. So once she knocks on my door, and my wife wasn't home, she knocks on my door, and I didn't want to let her into the apartment. So I walked down to the hallway to speak to her. I said, "What do you need? What can I do for you?" So she tells me that there was a fellow in the neighborhood who learned in the yeshiva, who was a Balchuv. His name was Ambush. Ambush is a Rosh Hatev, Sani Mamin, Baimun, and Shlomo. He became a Balchuv. He took on the family name Ambush. He was an older person when he came to the yeshiva. He had already been married from before, and he married off. He had a daughter from his marriage, and married off the daughter to one of his classmates. He was in his late 40s, and the classmate was 21 years old. So, anybody remember Ambush from the yeshiva? No, he lived in the neighborhood. So the woman, the local prostitute, knocks on my door. She says, "Ambush said she should ask me a very serious shaila. What's the shaila? That there's someone, a man who's getting married tonight, and she doesn't want him, chalila, to violate the chem de Rabbein Gershon, to marry two wives. So this man once came to her for her services, and he paid her money, but he didn't want to do bavera, so he gave her money in advance, and he said, harem mukudeshesli, so she'd be beheta. So the man is married to her, She doesn't ask a shayla, how do I remain in business? That she's not asking. She says, how can he marry someone else tonight? This is a chemder Rabbein Geshem. She's worried about the chemder Rabbein Geshem. So I asked her at the time that he gave you the money, and he said, were there any witnesses? She says, absolutely. Her two girlfriends were there at the time. So I asked her, were there any men there at the time? So she said, no. So I said, then the marriage didn't take effect. Because the Gemara learns that from a pasuk that you have to have two kosher eidim, they have to have two men present at the time that the chassan gives the rings as Hari Emukodesh. Okay, so that was easy enough. So now there's a Mishnah in Maseches Makis. The Daf Yomi people just ran through it last week, I think. There's a Mishnah in Makis that if three witnesses come to court and tell about a murder, or they tell about an accident, and they say that he was at fault, whatever they testify, so the three witnesses who testify, two of them are kosher eidim, and one of them is a relative of one of the two parties, or one a kariv, or one of them is a criminal, one of them is a crook, a gangster. So the Torah says that a rasha is pasalaitis. And the Chumash, it only speaks about rasha dechamas, one who cheats in business, or one who steals money from other people, and one who compromises on his religious principles for money purposes. Let's say, if you have a choice of kosher and non-kosher food, he'll eat the kosher food. If it costs the same, but if the kosher food is more expensive, then he'll compromise on his religious principles and buy the non-kosher food. So that's called the Rosh HaDacham. He does Averis in order to save money. Or in order to make money, he steals money from others. So Ganef is Pasul Eidus, a cheat, one who cheats in business, unfortunately. There are people like that who cheat in business. And then Kroivim are Pasul Eidus. So the Mishnah says if three witnesses come to court and they testify, they saw the same murder, and they all say the same thing, one of them was a Korev, and one of them was a Rasha. So if Bezin wasn't watching, and they listened to the testimony of all three, so that's called Korev Apostle, so they can't pasken on the case. Since one of the witnesses was Apostle, and they all came together, so even the testimony of the other two is not acceptable. So Tosfos is bothered with Akasha. Tosfos has the expression, Hech Matzino Yedeinu V'Ragleinu. Every time you have a wedding, there are always relatives standing there watching the ceremony. There are always some criminals in the audience also watching the ceremony. Tosfos even asked to buy a divorce. Today, when a couple gets divorced, they don't invite all the cousins and all the young, they don't send down invitations. Everybody should attend the divorce. But apparently, in the days of the Bali Tosfos, the whole family came to witness the divorce. I can't visualize what it looked like. So Tosfos says, bother with the kasha, how is any kiddushin ever get off the ground? How does any get ever get off the ground? They're always kroivim and psulim, watching when the chosen marries the kalm. So Tosfos gives the answer, and that's the accepted opinion. This din of Korev Apostle only applies by Eid HaMeid if the three witnesses testified in court. And it turns out by mistake, Bezin wasn't watching. They should have asked in advance, who are you? If they didn't watch and they didn't ask in advance, and it turns out that one of the witnesses who testified, Eid HaMeid, was a relative of one of the Baladinim, or was a gangster, is a ganef, so then the Bezin can't even pasken based on the other testimony of the other two. But if it's only talking about Eid HaRoeh, people were standing at a wedding and watching, so then there's no din of Korev Apostle. The whole din doesn't apply. I remember I once attended a wedding many years ago. It was my chavrusa was getting married. So my chavrusa asked me, I was single at the time he got married. He had already a baby before I got married. So my chavrusa got married, so he asked me to be one of the eight in Kiddushin. So I didn't know who the other eight Kiddushin was under the chuppah. He wasn't from the yeshiva. And when it came to the meal, so the married couples were sitting together on other tables, and the single boys were sitting at one table. So I sit next to the other aide. So I say, Shalom Aleichem, my name is Herschel Schechter. I'm a Harusa with the Chosn. Who are you? He tells me his name. He lives in Eretz Yisrael now. He tells me his name, and he tells me he's a cousin of the Chosn. So I said, you can't be a cousin of the Chosn. He picked you as an aide. He says, I'm a first cousin? I don't know. I don't know what the din is. So when the Chosn came out after the first din, so I walked over and I asked, the other eight tells me that he's your cousin. How do you pick your cousin as an eight? He says he's a cousin from the mother's side. So I say, therefore what? Therefore what? Still postulated. There's a question in the Rambam whether relatives from the mother's side, the din is that the relatives from the father's side are called mishpacha. Relatives from the mother's side are not called mishpacha. That's based on the pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar that says l'mishpachosam l'veis avosam. So relatives from the mother's side and akrovim, but it's not called the chadoshem kurva. Mishpacha only applies to the father's side, and that's relevant for Yerusha purposes. If my cousin from my mother's side dies, I don't get the Yerusha. If I die, he doesn't get the Yerusha. only relatives from the father's side. Because by Yerusha it says, Mishpachta v'yorusha, only Mishpacha gets. She'er Basar is a relative for the purposes of getting married. They're not allowed to marry relatives. So even relatives from the mother's side are also She'er Basar. But relatives that are called Mishpacha is only the father's side. So the Rambam writes that the relatives from the mother's side are also Basar Lahedis, Medivrei Sofrim. So that's the question. Whenever the Rambam writes Medivrei Sofrim, you can never tell for sure whether he means Medirabbanan or he means Torah Shebaal Peh. Medivrei Sofrim means based on what the rabbis taught us. So sometimes the rabbis invented a din Medirabbanan, sometimes the rabbis told us what it says in the Chumash. It's not explicit. We're not sure what the Rambam says. So yes, the Chassan, I told Chassan, even from the mother's side, is also no good. So he was all nervous. So he said, I should ask Rabbi Soloveitchik the next day. Rabbi Soloveitchik was not at the wedding. So I should ask him the next day. So yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik, what should he do? So he said, were there other kosher Edom who saw the Kiddushin? So I said, the Messiah Kiddushin was Rabbi Greenblatt from the Queens Jewish Center. So he said, he's a kosher Edom. Right? There were other people also standing there. He said, we follow the Tosfos that the din of Korav Apostle only applies if it's an Eid HaMeid, if three witnesses testified in court. But it was just Eid HaRoya, the witnesses were watching, then the din of Korav Apostle doesn't apply. Rabbi Chaim Moser has an interesting tshuva. They sent him a shaila from New York. There was a girl who was divorced, a grusha, and every time she went out on a date with her boy on the east side, every time she went out on a date, she would ask the boy in the middle of the first date, are you a Kohen? Because if you're a Kohen, I can't marry you. So half of the boys were some of the boys were Kohanim, so that was out of the question. And the boys who were not Kohanim, it didn't work out. Finally, she meets a guy, are you a Kohen? He says, no. And they're dating, they get married. And then 3 days into the marriage, the chassan tells his kala, by the way, I am a Kohen. I told you a lie. So she insists, I want to get a get right now. So they went to get a taxi. They drove to the rabbi who was Masada Kedushin on the east side. And the taxi stopped for a red light. And the chassan jumped out of the taxi and disappeared. Not a half a year later. And there's no chassan. And the girl is an Eishes Ish. So the rabbi considered this a very serious shaila. To permit an Eishes Ish to marry without a get is a serious shaila. You can't have any Rabbi Tom, Rabbi Dick, and Rabbi Harry paskin such a shaila. You have to have big rabbanim. So the rabbi in New York from the east side sent a shaila to Rabbi Chaim Moser, who was the big rabbi in Vilna. He was the big posek of the generation. These kind of shailas, you would ask Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, who died in the late 1800s, you would ask Rabbi Chaim Moser. After Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan passed away, Rabbi Chaim Moser was the big posek. And then Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in America, you need a major posek. And now we have it's a joke. You have a bezin of three rabbis. No one ever heard of these rabbis. One of them is really an accountant, but he got smicha once in a yeshiva and said, does this work on the side? What do you mean he does the work on the side? The paskin that a woman is allowed to remarry without a get. You have to have major poskim, and the major poskim would write, the Rabbi Chaim Moser and Bitzchon, they would write in the tshuva, they think we could be mekel, but only on the condition that you get another two prominent rabbis, major prominent rabbis, to agree with me, to permit the woman to marry without a get. So the rabbi on the east side sent a shaila to Rabbi Chaim Moser. So first, the rabbi on the east side thought that it's a kiddushi tois, because every single time the girl went out on a date with anybody, she always asked the first question, are you okay? On the first date, she always asked, and this fellow told her a lie. So it's clear that she never wanted to marry a boy as a kohen. She wasn't so religious. She married a guy who wasn't observant at all. But that din, she didn't want to violate. She didn't want to marry a kohen because she knew she was a grusha. So Rabbi Chaim Moser was not prepared to be mekel based on that alone, to say that it's a kiddusha to us, because sometimes the girl will get desperate and she'll already compromise on her principles. She doesn't want to marry a kohen, but she's already, years are going by, and she doesn't find another shidduch. So sometimes she wasn't so observant, sometimes she will compromise. So he wasn't prepared to be mekel based on that alone. So he was mekel based on another consideration. He quotes several poskim who, Rishonim Meseilis, he quotes Ramban and Aritva and Aran, a few Rishonim say this, that if you specified, if you singled out as one of the witnesses, apostle or aid, So then you say Korav Apostle, even though it's only Eid Haroi, even though it's not Eid Hamei, even though the witness didn't testify. So here, by the chuppah, the rabbi asked the chassan, who do you want to be the Eidim? So he picked his friends. His friends were people who used to eat chazer on Yom Kippur. He used to have dances years ago. They used to have dances on Yom Kippur and eat chazer treifas. They weren't observed. No Shabbos, no kashas, no taras hamishpacha, nothing. So he singled out one of the witnesses, both of the witnesses were his buddies, were his chavim, who were not observant at all. Rav Chaim Oizer said that maybe, even though we really don't paskan like that, that if you singled out the witnesses, even though it's only eight haraya, that should be Karab Apostle, but it's Sira, if it's a Kiddush HaTorah with the Karab Apostle, there's room to be made. Yeah, but over here, in this situation, the Chosin thought that the relative, mistakenly, the Chosin thought the relatives from the mother's side are not Apostle Aedas. So it was a mistake that he singled him out. He wanted to single out specifically Kosher Aedim. And he thought mistakenly in the din that the relatives from other side are Kosher Aedas. If he would have known the din, he would have not singled him out. So other poskim, Chasam Sefer has a chew about that. He singled out a witness who was Apostle Aedas, but you thought he was Kosher. So that's a Yichud Betoy. So such a Yichud Betoy doesn't count as Yichud. So we revert back to the basic din that Karav Apostle doesn't apply to an Eid Harai. So that's not really right. There are batidinim around, who there are non-qualified rabbis around, who would permit a woman to remarry without a get. And these non-qualified rabbis are not at all on the level of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Chaim Oizer, and so on. Now they'll permit it because they were pasul eidim present by the chuppah. So that's a joke. That's not really acceptable at all. Recently, one of these batidinim was very proud of a psak that they gave, so they published it on the internet. Everybody should see what was the psak. If a non-Jew gives a ring to a girl and says, "Hare mukudeshesli," so there is no kiddush. So the Gemara has a din, if a person is machal Shabbos b'fahesi, has a din like a non-Jew. So they got witnesses to testify that the chosin was not a Shem Shabbos in a public fashion before he married the girl. So therefore, a goy who is Makadosh and Isha and Gushan, we're laughing. But this bezin paskin halacha like that. Just like if a non-Jew, people are listening in astonishment. Just like a non-Jew is Makadosh and Isha, the Gedushan and Natchal. So if you have a Jew who is Machal Shabbos Befes, he has a din like a goy. So the Machal Shabbos, Makadosh and Isha, the Gedushan and Natchal. This is a joke. In Europe, many of the Rabbanim would be Messiah the Kedushan from Machal Shabbos. The Kedushan Achal, there is no such din. Chal Shabbos Befehesia, first of all, many poskim since the beginning of the Reform Movement, so they say the Binyan Sion was a rabbi in Germany where the Reform Movement was very strong when it first started, and the Chazon Ish was already in Vilna when the Reform spread to Eastern Europe. So they all say that today we don't have a concept of Chal Shabbos Befehesia. Chal Shabbos Befehesia means that it's Chal Shabbos B'mezid, and he's breaking the discipline in the community. So if you have so many people on Machal Shabbos, he's not breaking discipline. The Orthodox people are breaking the discipline. And Eretz Yisrael, how can I say Machal Shabbos Befehesia? There's so many Jews who are not observant here. What do you mean breaking the discipline? The Minkacher, the Mincha Saluza, right? So he disagrees with the Binyan. So he says, what do you mean? Of course there's Machal Shabbos Befehesia. Maybe a Minkach. Everybody was a Shem Shabbos, and there was one Jewish barber who kept open on Shabbos, so he was a Shegetz. Everybody knew he's Machal Shabbos Befehesia. He's breaking the discipline. But if you live in a country where so many Jews, the majority, overwhelming majority of Jews are not Shem Shabbos, so B'chalal, the din of Machal Shabbos Befehesia doesn't apply. And even if it would be, even in years ago, generations ago, when a person is Machal Shabbos Befehesia, you're going to say, Zdina Kigoy? And the Kiddushan Anatchal, that's a joke. The Gemara says that if you have a Jew who converted to another religion and he worships Avodah Zarah literally, and he doesn't identify as a Jew at all, if he's Mekadosh and Isha, the Kiddushan Achal. Machal Shabbos, Dina Kegoy, he doesn't apply to every single din. You can't sell him your chametz. You can't use him as a Shabbos Goy. He's Jewish. Dina Kakam and Geta, if he's Shech Tzaveimish, Chitos and Avela. But not going to get to all the dinim in the Torah, it doesn't apply. So yeah, for sure it doesn't apply. Just because a person is Mechal Shabbos Befehesiv, you wouldn't declare that it's dinim ka'akum and that the Kiddushan are not chal. The Beis Yosef quotes such an opinion from one of the Rishonim who said so, that if a Jew is Mechal Shabbos Befehesiv, dinim ka'akum, and therefore the Kiddushan are not chal. So that Rishon made a mistake. We have respect for all of the Rishonim, and we often apply the rule Eilu Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim. A lot of times when you have a machlokes, we say, when you learn, let's say there were many disputes between the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel. So the overwhelming majority of the cases, we paskan like Beis Hillel. And then there are cases, of course, there are six cases where we paskan like Beis Shammai. So when a person studies the opinions of Beis Shammai, it's considered Bittul Torah. Because we don't accept the shitas of Beis Shammai. No, even though you don't accept the Gemara, say, Eilu Eilu Dibur L'Kim Chayim, Beis Shammai's opinion will based on Midrash HaTorah and Nidreshes Behem. when you learn their opinions, it's considered a chefza shel Torah. Halacha lemaisa, we don't pass like Beis Shammai. But still, the Gemara says many times, is not only that when you study Beis Shammai Shita, even though we don't pass like them, it's not Bitl Torah, it's Talmud Torah. Sometimes it's even relevant halacha lemaisa. The Gemara has, for example, in Hilchas Avelus, we have a klal, whenever there's a machlokes. So a lot of times there's a machlokes. You go ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says lahachmir. How does he have the right to say lahachmir? He knows there's a machlokes. He holds lahachmir. You can't force him to say lahakel. But a lot of times you'll ask a rabbi, what's the din? The rabbi doesn't have his own opinion. He doesn't feel that he's entitled to express his own opinion. He's not learned enough. And he knows that there is a machlokes. He knows that 95% of the poskim hold lahachmir and 5% hold lahakel. So if he himself doesn't have any tradition how to paskin, then he sees that there is a major machlokes. Then we say, halacha k'dei ra mekel ba'ovel. When it comes to avelus, you have a right to be mekel, even though the cool opinion is in the minority. And the Rishonim say, the Ga'onim say, the Ramban in the Torah Sa'odam, Ramban wrote a whole, the Ramban was a doctor. Same, the Rambam and the Ramban were both doctors. So he wrote a whole book for doctors called Torah Sa'odam. What are the dinim when a baby is born? How do you treat the baby? How do you treat the baby on Shabbos? To what extent are you allowed to be mechal on Shabbos? And then he has later, when the baby grows up, when is it bikoch nefesh? What are the dinim of a chayla she'im basakana, yesh basakana, sakana seva? What are all the dinim and much of the Shulchan Aruch? And then when the person gets sick and dies, how do you rip kriya and how do you observe shiva? And then once he talks about observing shiva, he talks about observing Tisha B'Av, because Tisha B'Av we observe that shiva. It's a whole sefer called Teres Ha'odom. From the day the baby is born till the baby dies, he has all the dinim. So the Ramban in the Sefer Torah Sodom quotes a Tosfos in Erev, which we have verbatim the Tosfos. Tosfos quotes the Tshuvas HaGoyinim that even those aspects of Avelos that are dinim deraisa, whenever there is a biblical din and you have a suffix, so you go luchumer suffix deraisa luchumer. If you have a suffix, a doubt regarding a rabbinical din, so the Gemara says in many places you have a right to be mekel, to be lenient. So Tosfos points out in the aim of the Gaonim, if you have a suffix in Hilchas Avelus, you are Mekel, even if that aspect of Avelus is a din deraisa. It's not based on the assumption that Avelus is Minderabbanan. Even if one should assume that Avelus Yom Rishon, the first day of Shiva, is deraisa, Ashkenazim don't accept that opinion. But the Sfardim follow that opinion. Rabbi Yosef Karo writes in the Shulchan Aruch that the first day of Shiva is deraisa. He's following the Sfardim Shiposkin. And the Ramah writes with Ashkenazim, Ramah follows the Ashkenazi poskim. He says that even the first day of Shiva is also the Rabban. So it has a few nafkaminas, halacha lemaisa, whether the first day of Shiva is the Raisa, the Rabban. But this is not one of the nafkaminas. Tosfos quotes in the name of the Gaonim that even if one were to assume that Avelus Yom Rishon is the Raisa, he still say halacha k'deva mekabal, still have a right to be mekel. So if you have a machloikah, so you have a right to be mekel. What is that based on? That's based on, so the Mishkan is Yankev, a health tshuva, he said it's based on the principle of Eilav Eilav Dibilikim Chaim. Doesn't only mean that the Shitas of Beis Shammai constitute Talmud Torah, that it's a mitzvah, Liman HaTorah, when you spend time to learn Beis Shammai's opinion, means it's even considered a Sufik Koldu, it's considered a doubt what the din is. We paskin like this, we paskin like Beis Hillel, we paskin like the majority opinion, but the minority opinion is considered a Sufik Koldu. And it's even relevant halacha lemaisa here b'negiyah to avelus. Also relevant b'negiyah to orlo b'chutz la'aretz. And the Chumash it says if you plant a tree in a kisavoy al ha'aretz, and Parshas Kedoshim and says kisavoy when you come there it's so. When a taitam kol eitz meichel, you plant a fruit bearing tree. So the first 3 years va'aratam alosa shalushana marem yelachem lo yachal. The first 3 years, a lot of times nothing will grow. But if pears do grow, even the first 3 years, you're not allowed to eat them. The rasa b'hanor. What about Orla B'chutz La'aretz? Orla B'chutz La'aretz is halacha l'moshe misina. It doesn't really say in Chumash, but the Mishnah says that it's prohibited. There are different opinions, whether it's the Rabbanon or halacha l'moshe misina. The generally accepted opinion is that Orla B'chutz La'aretz is halacha l'moshe misina. Despite the fact that halacha l'moshe misina means that it's a biblical din, the din still says that Safek Orla B'chutz La'aretz is mutter. So the Gemara says, how much of a Safek does it have to be? It has to be a 50-50 Safek. The Gemara says, no. Even if it's the overwhelming majority of the poskim say one way, and it's only a minority opinion that says lahakel, that's called the sofik holdu, that's enough. Just like by avelus, that's enough to be mekel. Even if one were to assume avelus is their isa, so by all the chutzlots, even though we assume that you're not allowed to eat the peris the first 3 years if it grows on the tree, even a chutzlots halachah moshe m'sinai is their isa, but still sofik all the chutzlots says lahakel. Then you have a few other cases where you're mekel. So one of the cases where we're mekel, based on a minority opinion, is the Gemara has in a few places in Shas, very few places, that b'shas hatchak you have a right to rely on the shittas hayochid. Why? So the generally accepted opinion, there's a dispute between the Shach and the Taz in Yeridea and Hilchas Orla. So the Shach usually wins whenever there's an argument between the Shach and the Taz. We rarely paskin like the Taz. When he disagrees, generally the Taz are much weaker than the Shach. So the Shach says that this klal only applies when you're dealing with a din derabbanan. All the cases in the Gemara, dinam derabbanan. In the opening Mishnah in Brochas, the Mishnah tells a case that the children of Rabbi Gamliel came home late from a wedding and was already after midnight. They hadn't recited Kriya Shema. They didn't have Ma'ariv yet. So the Shaila was, can they say Kriya Shema with the brochas? Because there was an opinion that after Chatzos, after midnight, you're not allowed to say Birchas Kriya Shema. So Rabbi Gamliel said that since it's a machloikas and it's a shas hatrak, they have no Beira, so they can rely on the minority opinion that you can even say the Birchas Kriya Shema after Chatzos. The whole issue was only the Rabbanan. Then in the beginning of Maseches Nida also, the Gemara talks about it in the Rabbanan, then in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara talks about Muktzah. All the cases in the Gemara are all dinim of the Rabbanan. But the Gemara has, if you have a big Shas HaTchak, so you can be makel to rely on the Shittas HaYochin. What is that based on? The rule is that by dinim of the Rabbanan, Sofek the Rabbanan Lekula. Sofek the Rabbanan Lekula means if it's 50-50. If it's 85% say Lahachmer, 15% say Lahakal, that's not a Sofek the Rabbanan. You go Basar Raif. But if it's a big Shas HaTchak, then we stretch it a little bit and we say, since it's only a Din Rabbanan and Safik Rabbanan Lekula, so we consider this a Safik Rabbanan, even though it's not even 50-50. So that's what some say over here, that as long as the Beis Yosef quotes such an opinion, that one is Machal Shabbos Befes, is Mekadosh Anisha, the Kedusha, and Anatchal, since the Beis Yosef quotes such an opinion, so you have a right to be Mekel. We're talking about a Din Deraisa over here, whether the woman is an Eshishish, whether she needs a get. Dinim Deraisa, we don't accept the opinion of the Taz. We rarely accept the opinion of the Taz. You're not going to change all the Psokim and the Shulchan Aruch. Whenever there's a dispute, we ignore the Taz even when the Shach doesn't disagree. The Shach says the Klal only applies. It's a Din Derabbanan. A Din Derabbanan, Safik Derabbanan Lekula, said, doesn't always have to be 50-50 Safik. We stretch it in a situation of a big Shas HaTrak, Mamakim Hefzid Meruba, big Shas HaTrak, so we're Mekel to consider it a Safik Derabbanan, even though there's only a Shita Sayochit. Then furthermore, the Klolim, the Poskim have Klolim. The Poskim have klolim. I never witnessed this with my own eyes, but Rabbi Alpert Zichron Lebracha was a Rebbe in the Yeshiva. Many of you will remember Rabbi Nissen Alpert. He was very close to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. He lived in the same building as Rabbi Moshe. He was a Talmud of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein for many years. So he said he witnessed this a few times. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was a sweetie pie. So whenever you would invite him to come to a wedding, he would always strain himself to come to a wedding. Sometimes he would go 2-3 weddings in one night because he knew how much it meant to the people. So that he would attend their wedding. So Rav Moshe would always come on time. He didn't want people to wait for him. He would always try to come on time. So Rav Moshe would come on time. He would fill out the ksuba. They would give him a printed ksuba. He would fill it out. Rav Blazer Shilva would fly in from Shinshineti with his top hat. And he would see Rav Moshe filled out the printed ksuba. So he would rip it up in public. Because there's one opinion in the Mishnah and Gittin that we don't accept, that by a get, the whole thing has to be written out by hand, lishma. You can't take a printed form, just fill out the names and the date and the city, because a get has to be written lishma. But a ksuba doesn't have to be written lishma. So there's one opinion in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that we don't paskin like, that there's a chumra midrabbanan, all shtori mamon should be written by hand from the beginning to the end. You shouldn't use a printed form. So Rabbi Leizer Shilva would say, you have to be choshish for Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. So Rabbi, I never saw this, Rabbi Alpert said, the Ramosha wouldn't bat an eyelash, he would just sit there. He wouldn't say anything, but Moshe got the last word in because Moshe printed Shalos HaTshuvos. So in the middle of one of the tshuvos that he wrote, not apropos to the tshuva, he writes, would anybody in his right mind think that you have to write a get, you have to be machmer to write a get, to write a ksuba l'shma from the beginning to the end? He doesn't say Maiser Shahaya, but that's why he wrote it, obviously. When you read the tshuva, you don't understand why did he put that in. It was talking about relying on a minority opinion, to being choshed from a minority opinion. So he said, would anybody think that there's a midas chassidus to be a machmer for the shita sayach? And he says he doesn't think so at all. That it's only if they have klolim, the poskim have klolim. When does it make sense that b'shas hadchaki rely on the shita? When does it make sense to be machmer as a minas chasidus to be choshes for the shita? So first of all, Rav Moshe says it only applies if they were never omdu l'minyan. If all the rabbanim were together and they voted, they took a vote. If they lived in different countries, the Shach and the Taz lived in different cities. The Ksos and the Sivas lived in different countries. They lived in different places. They weren't facing each other. So there you say that there's a midas chasidus to be choshes for the minority opinion. But if they were all sitting together in the Beis Medrash and they took a vote, then that individual was outvoted. So goodbye and good luck. He was outvoted. So we're not choshes, we're not machmer for that opinion. And you can't say to the Shas HaTak, you have a right to rely on that opinion. Because it was omdu l'minyan. Then furthermore, the poskim have another klal, the Beis Shmuel and Ebenezer has this. If it's mamash shita yechidah, you have hundreds of rishonim. So someone woke up on the left side of the bed one day and made a mistake. Human beings, you make a mistake sometimes. You don't always say, Elohi Elohim Elohim Chaim. Sometimes made a mistake is against it. You have rishonim made mistakes against psukim and chumash. So that's called Elohi Elohim Elohim Chaim. They forgot a pasuk and chumash. Some, once in a while, a rishon made a mistake and forgot a beferish gemara. So you can't say Elohi Elohim Elohim Chaim if it's dead wrong. And even if it's not against the Beferish Gemara, if it's a Shita Yechidah, it's only one minority opinion, even if it's the Rambam, the Beis Shmuel and Ebenezer says, let's see, have the Rambam in the Rimagash. The Rimagash was a Talmud of the Rif. The Rambam's father learned by the Rimagash, who was a student of the Rif. So when the Rambam was a young child, his father brought him, Maimon, Ben Moshe, Ben Maimon, his father of Maimon, took him to his Rebbe, the Rimagash, for a bracha. So he gave him a bracha, he should go up to be a big tzaddik and big Yerushalayim, a big, Yerushalayim, a big Talmud Chacham. And he attributed his success in learning, the Rambam attributed his success to the bracha that he got from the Rimagash, and he considered the Rimagash his Rebbe. And he writes in one place, he didn't really know him well, he just as a young child, but he writes, Sichlo Mavis B'chol HaTalmud. He was phenomenal. He was a super genius. He knew all over. And he says, he can only chapam on less than, I think, 5 places or 10 places. He can only chapam with a mistake less than 5 or 10 places. So once in a while, the Rambam disagrees with the Rimagash. So even in a case where the Rambam and the Rimagash say the same, but no one else agrees, so the Beis Shmuel writes in Ebenezer, that's called the Shita Yechidah, because the Rambam was so kofuf, he was so subservient to the Rimagash, he says he was such a genius, whatever he says, we always follow him, so that only counts as one Shita, it doesn't count as two. Even though it's the Rambam is a major player in Halach, and it's the Rimagash. But the Rambam and Rimagash counts as one, and no one else agrees. It's Nogeh to Yerusha, Bal Yerusha, Sishta, a different halacha. So over also, no one agrees with this Rishon, the one who said that if a Mechal Shabbos Befer is Mekadosh and Isha, the Kedusha and Adchal, the whole thing is a joke. It's against the Befer Rishi Gemara. Of course you're not going to accept that opinion. And the Klal that B'Shas Hatchaki, you rely on the Shitas HaYochid, by an Aguna, there's room to rely on the Shitas HaYochid. That's if it's an aguna derabbanan, not if it's an aguna deraisa. I'll explain what I mean. There is a din in the Gemara that if there was a shipwreck and you don't think there were any survivors, so the best of our knowledge, we don't know that anybody survived. So that's called maim she'en lahem sof. Let's say a person drowns in a lake, and it's a small lake, and you can see all the edges of the lake. The witnesses are standing there. They saw the guy go under, and they're there for an hour, trying to retrieve the person, try to save his life, and they don't succeed. So that's called Maim Sheyesh Lahem Sof. You can see all the edges of the lake. You see, he didn't come up in an hour, so obviously he's dead. So even though you don't have the body, you allow the woman to remarry. But if it's Maim Sheyesh Lahem Sof, someone drowns in the ocean, you can't see all the edges of the ocean. To the best of your knowledge, you don't see that he came up alive. So they made a chumer midrabbanon that if someone drowns in Maim Sheyesh Lahem Sof and you didn't retrieve the dead body, you don't permit the wife to remarry. Why in the world did they make such a chumr midrabbanan? In agunas, they usually introduce kulas, because it's going to be miserable for the rest of our lives. So you have the famous kula that they introduced was, eid echad is believed. In the days of the Roman persecution, they would put people in a dungeon, they would starve to death, and they would die there. So the rabbis were happy if there would be one aid, if there would be one witness who knew that the husband was dead, to the other wife to remarry. So in the days of Rabbi Akiva, days of the Tanaim, this was a big dispute. Strictly speaking, Menatar, biblically, she really required two witnesses to say that the woman is allowed to remarry without a get. You say to assume that the husband is dead. As a dove should be every, you need two witnesses. So the rabbis were mekel midrabbanan, that's the simple reading in the Gemara, they were mekel midrabbanan to permit the wife to remarry based on Eid Echad. So the Achronim, the Asameach, explains, lest people get the mistaken impression that permitting a woman to remarry without a get is a very light inyan. You allow Eid Echad to testify in the case. So they felt they have to balance it out. They have to introduce a chumrah, that everyone should realize that it's a davar chamor miyod. They felt compelled to be mekel on the Eid Echad. The Gemara gives a whole explanation why they were mekel. But bottom line, it's only midirabbanan. Men haTorah, you really should need two Eidim. So in order to offset this mistaken impression that it's a light issue, so they introduce a chumrah that they thought would never really pose too much problems. Maim shein lahem sof. How often does it happen that that someone drowns in the ocean and you can't retrieve the body? It's a rare thing. And in fact, the way we assume lahalach and Shulchan Aruch is, let's say the poskim have the following case. A man was walking on a bridge that goes from one city to the other over a river, and the river was all iced over. A lot of times the river is iced over in the wintertime. You can drive a tractor on the river. You can drive a car on the river, and it's not going to sink because the ice is so thick. So the man slipped on the bridge, and he fell down. It was like five flights. He fell down, and his head first, and his head cracked into the ice. And then he made a hole in the ice, and he went through. So they couldn't retrieve the body because the whole river was iced over. So the poskim or mekel in such a case, that's the famous case, that's called trei rube. There's a double roiv. There's one roiv that if a person falls five flights and his head hits on cement, on concrete, or on ice that's so thick that the cars can drive on it, he's probably going to get killed based. He's probably going to die based on the impact of the falling down. And then number two, his body went under and he probably drowned. So you have one roiv, he probably died from the fall. And the second roiv, he probably died because of the water. He drowned. So whenever you have a double roiv, that will make him. That's famous. Rabbi Gorin was matar a lot of agunas in the Israeli army based on a trei rubi. That's why Yitzchak Chanan was famous for that, the trei rubi. But the whole thing is based on a Ramban. Everything goes back before. Mishkan es Yankif, said Rab Chaim Volozhiner was mekel on these kind of cases. Usually, let's say, an airplane explodes in midair, so most of the people on the plane are going to get killed based on the explosion. And then the airplane is going to crash on the ground, so then most of the people are going to get killed because of the crash. It's going to fall into the ocean, so they're going to die from the drowning. So usually in the cases of Maim Sheinu himself, when someone drowns in an ocean, Ruba de Ruba, you're going to have a trei Ruba. So when the Rabbanim introduced the Chumrah of Maim Sheinu himself, the Osamech explains they didn't really want to be Machmer. They wanted to be Mekal and Agunas, but they wanted to offset it. It shouldn't appear as if it's such a light matter, you can deal with it so lightly. So because they had introduced the Kula, Eid Echad is believed, so they felt compelled to introduce a Chumrah, but it's only a Chumrah on the books, Maim Sheinu himself. It rarely ever comes up. Like in the Second World War, there's so many people who are missing. All Ruba de Ruba of the people who were taken to this camp were killed. Hardly anybody came out alive. So that should be considered like a Maim Sheinu himself. So Moshe Feinstein wrote a whole shiva to do away to explain that. Maim Sheinu himself only applies on an individual basis. But if the whole Klal Yisrael, thousands and millions of people were involved in such a sakana. So then he said they never made chumrah Maim Sheinu himself. It's so restricted. The chumrah on the books, there's a chumrah Maim Sheinu himself. But Lamai said rarely ever comes up because we always have a reason to say it's always muta because of trei rubi or because of some other reason. So the Gemara tells a story that a man by the name of Chosso was married and he drowned in the ocean. And one of the rabbanim says, "Oy, Nebuch Rachmanus," he swears, "Hoelakim." He swears by Hashem's name, the fish have eaten up poor Mr. Chosso. He's eaten up by the fish. So this is a Gemara, the end of Yevamos, but the Gemara has all these dinim about Maim Sheinu himself. So Rabbi Akiva Eger on the side of the page quotes from the Mordechai, who quotes the Baal HaTais, they ask a question, how does he swear that poor Mr. Chosso was eaten up by the fish? We don't permit the wife to remarry. It means that we're not sure whether the husband is alive or dead. So how does he swear the husband is dead? We're not sure if he's dead. So he quotes the Mordechai, says, we're sure the husband is dead. 100% the husband is dead. He drowned in the ocean. Of course the fish ate him up. They made a chumrah on the books that the wife is not allowed to remarry. But strictly speaking, for all other intents and purposes, we assume the husband is really dead. So there, b'mayim, Sheila himself, where the woman is only an aguna midirabbanan. In our Torah, we know the husband is dead. We all know the husband is dead. Whenever you have a shayla of an aguna, so the first question you have to discuss, forget about the Gemara, is do you think the husband is alive or dead? So when we make up our mind, for sure the husband is dead, based on the evidence that the police had, whatever, for sure the husband is dead. Then you have to figure out, al pi halacha, do you have a right to be mekel? But first you decide, just based on the metzias, they think there's alive or dead. So b'mayim she'ein lahem sof, we know the husband is dead. So there the poskim say that if you have a minority opinion who's mekel, b'shas antrak, kedai who are a plain list, mechal b'shas antrak, you can rely on a minority opinion because that's only a chumer midrabbanim. In a Torah, we know the husband is dead and she can really remarry without any get. Yeah, as I say again, these cases have to be decided. I had once a case. A woman, I used to go to NCSY regionals, the Shabbatonim at the end of the season, middle of the summer. So I remember they sent a woman to me. She, a Jewish woman, she had a son from a non-Jewish husband. Son is now a big Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Very prominent Rosh Yeshiva. So his father was a goy. The woman was married to a goy. He was converted by some Reform Besen or something. So the woman asked me, does she need a get? Because she lived with her husband for years, and he never had a bris milah. She knows for a fact they never had a bris milah. So there was no conversion. He wasn't Jewish. I said, you don't need a get. The Reform conversion is meaningless. It's ABC. You have to have a bris milah. You have to go to a mikveh. You never did anything to begin. You can't just sign up as a Jew and become Jewish just because you say that you're Jewish. So I said, the woman doesn't need a get. That's not a complicated thing. But or sometimes a man who is Mekadosh, a woman, let's say the local prostitute from down the block, she tells me that when the man gave her the Kesu Kiddushin, there were no witnesses at all. No witnesses, there's nothing to discuss. But if you have a normal case, when a man married a woman, and he seems to be a Jewish man, he can't just make up terutzim that it's a Kiddush Torah. If he would have known, if she would have known, that's a joke. That's by HaTorah and Dorim, there's such a thing. But not by marriage. You don't declare, you don't nullify marriage based on the fact that after many years it turned out to be a miserable marriage. That's not called the Kiddusha Torah. You knew that in advance, that you're running a risk. That's like buying shares in a corporation or buying real estate. You know, it can go up, it can go down. And these kind of issues have to be brought to prominent Rabbanim. When people have these kind of shaylos today, I refer them, they should go to Rabbi David Feinstein, who was Mishamish his father a lot, and he knows what his father would have said in such a case. But you can't have just a local Orthodox Bezdin. One of them is basically an accountant, and one of them is a doctor on the side. And so, what do you mean? You have to have prominent big Rabbanim to permit a woman to remarry without a get. We have the few rare cases that it says in the Gemara, that Afkin Rabbanu Kiddush Mina, even in those rare cases, one of the famous Rishonim said, those cases don't apply today either. Why? The Ravon writes like that. Why? He says that it's not that the Bezdin in the days of the Gemara declared that the marriage is null and void. How do they know what's happening today? The Bezdin in our generation has to declare that the marriage is null and void, and we don't have a central Bezdin. We don't have a centralized Bezdin that everybody recognizes as acceptable. Maybe if you have the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, maybe if you have someone parallel to Moshe Feinstein in America, something like that. But Stam, to put together Rabbi Tam, Rabbi Dick, and Rabbi Harry, you can't say, Afkin Abban and Kedusha Mineh. People get married based on what Rabbi Tam, Dick, and Harry are going to say. They never heard of Tam, Dick, and Harry. They heard of the chief rabbi of Israel. That's what to discuss. But unfortunately, they've made a joke out of this whole issue, and we have to preserve the institution of marriage and the Jewish people. Thank you.
Okay, for those who have registered for lunch, it's going to be on the main floor. We're going to break the lunch until 12:45, then we're going to do the session. And our session with Rabbi Amar is going to be at 1 o'clock.
I have a question. First of all, do you have any books about the subject books?
Do I have any books?
Yes.
No, I read a few essays.
Oh, okay. The other question is, the you think that like Goren,
he had cases where there was no get, where the husband drowned in a submarine. Where the submarine disappeared. He never got the body. So he was usually lenient based on the fact that there was a double row. Most of the cases of drowning are going to have a double row.
Oh,
that there was an explosion, and that it drowned.
So those were the basis for the Aguna? That those women were allowed to be
right.
By Rabbi
Korver? Yeah, yeah.
But there was also, there were other cases where
Rabbi Korver gave other gifts, based on other reasons. I'm sure there were many cases, yeah. Chief Rabbiner gets involved in many, many, many cases.
So is it acceptable? What Rabbi Korver did, is it right? Is it the balance?
Probably was good. Why not? It was a learned person. It was a very learned person. The heter of double roy, that's a classical heter. He just applied it. He didn't come up with the heter. He just applied it in many cases.
Question to ask you, because yes. You made the point that when it comes to Hadaras and Hadaram, it's a lower level of Das, and when you're coming to Kedushin Tos, then it has to be a higher level of Das. But it seems like, based on what Chaim Reisler did, is he didn't go to find out whether it's the Emes or not. And the example you gave, Hadaras and Hadaram, was the guy, was it Taka true that he believed that he wouldn't get a portion of the Yerusha if he didn't come to whatever event it was? But when it came to the issue of being vater, annulling the marriage, the shiloh that came up to Ephraim, it was an objective, not a subjective, it was an objective. It was, most women would probably want to marry even if they knew that the guy was a Kohen. So the answer to the question, no, but there was an objective standard. She may have, but there was no question about whether it was an MS or an MS. Like the example you gave, you gave the question about the job. In other words, was it true or not that they believed that? Is it an issue? Is it true or not that they believe that, or is that most people would not believe that?
Right. The man who wants Hadaras has to tell the truth. Is it really true that if you would have realized, people would have told you the time you took the letter that you got into big trouble, you would not have taken the letter.
It was personal. They asked him, and they believed that he was telling the truth. But why is that not true? You talked about a higher level of Das. I'm just curious whether the higher level of Das speaks to the truth or it speaks to some objective criteria. That's all that I'm asking. In other words, you asked that woman, did you truly, truly not marry him, would not have married him if you thought that he was a Kohen? That question should have been asked, as opposed to Rev Chaim Meiser basically saying that in all likelihood women in her situation would marry anyway.
Probably a position that is first, because every time she dated someone, she was from the first date. Probably, but he says he wouldn't rely on that alone, because sometimes a girl will be desperate if it's taking a couple of years.
So that's an objective. That's an objective decision instead of asking her whether that was her intent. Doesn't it go to her intent? Doesn't it go to the personal intent for the toss?
So on the first date, she asked the fellow, you're kind. He said no, so then she proceeded.
Do you understand my question? My question is, do we in some way superimpose a societal or whatever assumption that most people in a situation like this would not be thinking that the woman who marries the guy who doesn't have work after 20 years and 6 would not be thinking that at the time that she actually made the commitment? Mm-hmm. Or do we actually ask the individual and find out what the emes is about what their intent was at the time? As ridiculous as it may sound, to ask the question.
And the woman says, I asked him on the first date, to see if I'm. He said no. So she was working a lot of stuff. And he just says, maybe she changed her mind. Because at the chuppah she didn't say. If she would have said at the chuppah, are you a kohen? He would say no. Then for sure it'd be kedushin to us.
Okay.
Because she only said it on the first day. So he says, maybe the girl would compromise on her religion.
Okay, I don't want to push it more than I'm pushing it, but you made a comment that it would be sort of ridiculous to assume that somebody was assuming a certain condition when they came into the marriage of something that would happen 20 years later. And my question is, do you ask the question, was that in your intent at the time? Okay, so that doesn't override it, is what I'm saying. Okay, and if you believe that it's so true, then there will be room for condition tests, is what I'm saying.
No, that's only as well as by Nadarim. Because by when you get married, you know that all the marriages are there. Every marriage is there.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your intent was. it doesn't matter what your thoughts and intent was when it comes to Kedusha Tos. Okay. So that's what I'm struggling with. I'm trying to understand what would be the basis for this.
The reason why I said it's
a higher level of Das, so that's what's curious.
Bigger thoughts to declare that it's a thought. By the door, you need it's sufficient with a lower level of Das. So the person comes in and says, if I would have known that I'm going to get into big trouble, I would never have taken the nether. So the best declares it is a nether because by marriage, you need a higher level of Das. We assume that when they got married, they had that higher level of Das.
The higher level of Das speaks to, is based on the higher level of Das.
By marriage, you need a higher level of Das than by Nidor.
The Das being?
To get married. So if you agree to get married, you express that higher level of Das. You can't just poof it away. Bezel will say, oh, if he would have known, he would have never got married.
I'm struggling with what that means, but I'm going to let all of you look at
yes.
It's a little unclear when you can rely on Hustle to be annul the marriage. Right? I think that was what the
right. In the case of the cousins, I was also going to ask that. In the case of the cousin,
we said that.
Right. So whatever Rav Moshe says that in a conservative or reform wedding, we say that v'daya the edim were puzzle, but there might have been kosher edim also, especially at the conservative.
In the case with the kohen also, you said that there were puzzle, that the edim were puzzle, and they were designated. Right?
Yeah.
So now typically in an Orthodox ceremony, they are designated.
Right. So if the designation was a mistake, like my Harus and Ramar, he thought the dinners at the relatives, cousins on the other side of Kasha, so that designation doesn't count. In Chaim Moshe's case, it was the mistake. He wanted his friends to be the Edom by the Kedusha. He wasn't thinking that he's picking Kosher Edom. He just picked two Edom.
So does that mean that generally if the Edom were designated and you know that one was puzzled and was intended to be that way, then you can annul the marriage?
So there is a minority opinion like that. So Chaim Moshe combined that minority opinion with the fact that it probably was a Kedusha Tos. Because every time the girl went on a date, each time she tried with a new boy, she asked her, you were kind. So he says it probably was a Kedusha Tos because even though she didn't ask at the wedding, but she probably was a Kedusha Tos. But because maybe it wasn't, maybe the girl was desperate and she already reached, but she didn't say it at the chuppah. So he's mitzarf this other tzad that there was a minority opinion that if you designated puzzle Adam, so then the whole marriage doesn't take effect. Even though there are kosher Adam watching also.
And do we rely on that nowadays?
We wouldn't rely on that alone.
If there was a non-religious couple, for example, they got married, she became a Baal Teshuva, but she became a Baal Teshuva, and he didn't want to give her a get.
Right.
Would we rely on the Edom to...
So sometimes we would. Let's say if there are kosher Edom, but they weren't there under the chuppah, they didn't see the chassan give the ring to the kala. So the Chassam Sefer says, and he quoted in the Pesachim, the Chassam Sefer says, if it's a prominent rabbi performing the marriage, even the people in the back of the hall, even though they don't see handing over of the ring, they know that the prominent rabbi did everything correctly, so it's considered as if they too are Edom on the way. But if the rabbi being inside the Kedushin is a reformer, conservative rabbi, nothing is for sure.
According to the brother,
even though the Hatan doesn't know that these people are puzzled.
It doesn't matter.
Because in the case of the cousin, he didn't know that the cousin was puzzled also.
Right, that doesn't still matter, possible. But he knows
it. But the chassan speak to the rabbi and said, this one is my wife's cousin or something. Or the cousin. I mean, he was suspicious.
A relative is puzzled.
Right.
According to the rabbi, there's a problem. I've heard of chassanas where they get up and say, these two people are designated as Edim to the exclusion.
So Rabbi Soloveitchik, when he first came to America, spoke English like a European. He didn't speak like we speak. So he formulated such a nusach, I'm designating these two witnesses to the exclusion of all that. Doesn't mean that no one else is an aid. It means you two should excuse yourself from the others. You're not about to be in the tour, but yeah.
It doesn't mean...
The chassan is excluding everybody else. It means the two aidim are excluding themselves. They don't want to be in the tzitzar with the rest of the psuli aidis.
But you could that's still be falosach on the people in the crowd to be a aid, even though you said to the exclusion.
Even though you said it doesn't mean that's right. Moshe Feinstein is quoted. He said, what are Rabbi Soloveitchik saying about the exclusion? What are you talking about? He didn't mean to exclude the others. He spoke a European English. He didn't speak an American English. He formulated that idea. So he said what it means is that the witnesses, the Gemara says that, if you have two kosher witnesses and they say, we don't want to join with anybody else, we're coming separate from everybody. We don't know who the other people are, we're coming separate. So then the din of Karva Puzzle doesn't apply. We are excluding ourselves from the other, but not that the chassan is excluding everybody else from testifying. There is no such thing. You can't exclude the other one.
Before you murder someone, you can say, like, I exclude everyone from being able to testify.
Yeah, so he gets away with murder. That's a joke.
Right. About 6-7 years ago, there was a case of Kiddush Mine with the Kohen in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was the
They said, some crackpot rabbi, he said that because the grandmother who married a Kohen was in a concentration camp, so there's a din with the Rabbanon Shvuya. If a woman was held captive by the Goyim, so we are afraid maybe she was raped by the Goyim. Even though she says that she was not raped, some of the Rabbanon, she's not allowed to marry a Kohen. So that's a din with the Rabbanon. So the rabbi, the Chacham rabbi, he didn't know enough learning, so he said since she was a Shvuya, so after the war, there were thousands, tens of thousands of women who were shvuyas, and the rabbanim permitted them.
What
shvuyas? Held captive in a non-Jewish prison. And maybe she was raped by one of the non-Jews. Then she's not allowed to marry a kohen. So the rabbanim said after the war, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein doesn't have a tshuva. I don't know why. I don't know what his opinion was. But the rabbanim in Europe wrote tshuva. So they said it doesn't apply here because it was against the law to have an affair with a Jewish woman. They treated the Jews like dogs, like animals. And you would lose your job if they would find out that that one of the officers in the Nazi army had an affair with a Jewish woman, and they would fire him.
Yeah, I thought they didn't touch Jewish women.
They weren't allowed to.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Many of them did. Many of them did, but it was against the law. So if the woman swears up and down that she was not raped by the guy, and under these circumstances, the rabbanim committed it. So this rabbi, who probably would have been the first one to say that she's allowed to marry a kohen, if he'll be on the scene 70 years ago. So the rabbi now says, since the grandmother was a shvuya, she wasn't allowed to marry a kohen, so her children are halolim, and the grandson is a cholol, so a cholol is allowed to marry a grusha. The worst thing can be is a cholol mid the rabbanim. A cholol mid the rabbanim is not allowed to marry a grusha.
Because they were, okay, this was the second marriage for him, and she was a Gerusha. They said they were Mavkia, the Kiddusha from that, and I thought the Rav was involved with that.
That's not the same case. I think they're talking about a different case. That the Kohen wanted to marry a Gerusha, so one of the rabbis said, if the Kohen was a Cholo, why? Because his grandmother was a Shvuya. She was a different case.